welcome to MGO Podcast 10.18, where Xavier rains thunder from the sky. First things first, we must start by constructing Ohio State a conference room that they, of course, lost earlier this year due to being a horrible organization of horrible people. But they get their conference room back. So we can take it away again.
I was going to say, we're not going to give them one. We have to give them one so that they can feel the pain again.
Well, so we gave them their conference room back, and the tearing, the crunching, the noise that you hear right now... is the conference room being destroyed again because they lost to Rutgers. So there you go.
I did not see any of that game. I don't know if you watched
it. I did, and it felt right. No, I mean...
Okay.
I mean, what I mean by that...
I guess I'm on board with that.
What I mean by that is they didn't really look that much different from Rutgers.
Oh.
Like, Rutgers is a very good defensive team that doesn't really have anyone who can go get to the rim. They don't have much of an offensive system.
Yeah, they just like amateur ball.
Yeah, kind of. And yeah. They just have Geo Baker running around and hoping to can stuff. And Ohio State kind of feels the same way. Like, they have Wesson, who's kind of like Nick Ward, but not nearly as...
They have two of them, don't they?
Well, Caleb Wesson. Okay. Andre Wesson is just kind of his, like, sidekick.
Tag along?
Yeah.
All right.
And they just don't... They didn't really feel like the teams were that different. And thus Rutgers gets a dub, and Ohio State loses the conference room for a second time this season. So we've got that going for us.
What we don't have going for us is we kind of lost our conference room.
What? Why?
Well, because we're in a different room.
Oh, okay. Yes, we are literally in a different room.
Well, it's a little different. We don't have a whiteboard, which I'm very upset about.
Well,
I had to use a sheet of paper.
It's the Huron room. So
it is.
It's like EMU's room, and they won their bowl game, so... That's good.
Oh, winning a bowl game.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, Underground Printing, The Bow Store, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshore Lending, the University of Michigan Alumni Association, the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Human Element, Michigan Law Grad, and Lantana Hummus. Anyway, let's talk about basketball. Michigan is 17-0 for the first time in program history after, you know, wins that they should have gotten at Illinois and at Northwestern. But even though Michigan... was a 10-point favorite in both those games. You know, neither of those teams is terrible. And these aren't like 95% shots in KenPom. They're 80 and change.
Okay.
And so should have won those games. Did win those games. Won by 20 against Northwestern. Won by 10 against Illinois. Northwestern was without Vic Law, but I don't think it really mattered.
Did we know he wasn't going to play until right before?
No, that was just a... like absolute last minute kind of thing.
Interesting.
So, yeah, and you know, in the Northwestern game, I mean, obviously the headliner is like the two players who Michigan kind of like tries to hide on offense go bonkers. They go absolutely batshit, and by the end of it, like people are like begging Xavier Simpson to like take tough contested threes because what if that one goes in?
Oh, when he crossed. The half court line at one point after hitting a few, I definitely yelled shoot it.
And did he?
Eventually. Yeah. I think that might have actually been his heat check.
His heat check.
But
so he's 5 of 10 from three. He hits a step back 18-foot
jumper.
Has he
ever taken three or 10 threes?
No.
I can't remember.
Well, he was 4 of 7 in a game earlier this year against like I think it was a tomato can. Maybe it was GW.
Okay. Well, they're kind of a tomato can.
Well, the thing about him is like so he was 2 of 4 in the last game. He's 5 of 10 in this game. He was 4 and 7 that one game, and he was 3 of 4 in some other game.
So it's very
and then he
concentrated.
He has 2 makes in his other 13 games.
Yeah.
So, you know, if Xavier Simpson...
Would you call him streaky?
I think, yes, I would. Like, it's a weird key to a lot of games now. It's like, is Xavier going to hit, like,
is
his
this
first
a Z
or
game
second
or,
three?
Yeah.
And then if he does, then it's like, oh, no.
That was the pool thing last year?
I don't know.
We had a guy in the last couple of years, right, where his first shot that went up was like
oh, that was
telltale.
Mo. That was Mo.
Oh, Wagner, okay.
Like his if his first shot went down, that felt like it was worth 10 points.
Okay.
Yeah, that was Mo.
That was last year, though. That wasn't 2 years ago.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, if Xavier Simpson is going to get that sag and he can just hit like 30% consistently, like that changes the equation for a lot of people.
I feel like consistently is the...
I mean, that is a thing, right? Like, he's been very streaky, but he's up to 33 on the year now. So, like, the best predictor of future performance is your past performance. And
yeah, I feel it's almost like a hitter in baseball that gets, like, four hits in a game and then doesn't get a hit for a week.
Yeah, I mean, hot hand theory has kind of made a comeback where it's like, okay, this might have some validity to it.
Well, at least this year with Z, it seems like that.
Well, yeah, it's one of those things where there's academic papers about it.
Ooh.
It's like, ooh, this doesn't exist. And then several years later, people are like, ooh, it might. So am I kind of on the team? Yes, it might.
Okay.
Given what we're seeing from Max. But, of course, he puts up 24 points. And in the aftermath of the game, they get the questions about, like, okay, what was the difference between this game and the Welsh Ryan game where he had to sit at the end because he missed three wide open threes.
Oh, yeah.
And both coaches went in.
Well,
it was like, and then the assembled press laughed. But then Beilein afterwards was like, that's kind of a dick response. So he didn't say
probably
that.
Probably not what he said.
But like he immediately said, that's a great question. And then he said two things that I think are salient.
Okay.
One, nobody had like dared him to shoot like that before. Nobody had given him the full tum-tum. And when that happens to you the first time, it's kind of like, are you absolutely prepared mentally to be like, okay, I need to take this shot? And it kind of felt like he wasn't. Like, he took the shots, but it kind of felt like he didn't want to.
Okay, but he knew that that was what they were going to get.
Like, late in Welsh Ryan, yeah.
Yeah.
And then the second thing he said was he took it as a personal affront. Which, absolutely true. If we know anything about Xavier Simpson, it's that he is frequently affronted. And what he does after he is affronted is he goes to work.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like, you know, Northwestern did us a favor here because they tried to see if that would work. They lost that game. And then, you know, I don't think X is going to be able... You can't sag off him like that. I feel like...
They can't anyway.
Well, I think you might try.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't think it's going to be a thing where, you know, you just aren't going to be able to do that with impunity. And I think Xavier Simpson being mad about the first matchup is a good reason why.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Beilein also said that I think that they practiced that the day before, like, just leaving him open.
Yeah.
And he went 0-7 and missed everything from that the scout team gave him.
Streaky.
And then... And so I think Beilein was a little like, well, we'll see. And then the next day knocked him down.
And then the second headliner in this game is John Teske, who hits...
basically did the same
basically
thing.
Basically, he hits three in the first half.
Yeah.
And completely broke Derek Pardon's brain. Like, Derek Pardon had 8 career three-point attempts going into this, so 9.
Okay.
And he took 4 threes in this game. And it's like, what? And he's 10 or 12 from 2. Like, what are you doing?
It's almost like he saw Teske hit those 2 long twos and then drop 3s. He's like, man, now I got to step out and
well, it's like anything you can do, I can do better, except you can't.
No.
And no disrespect to Derek Pardon, who really gave Michigan the business in both of these games inside the arc.
I mean, he's super efficient and, like, got to, I think, his right hand enough. Or
left.
His left hand.
Yeah.
His left hand, yeah. And finished a ton around the rim.
And, like... I mean, we've seen John Teske do really well against a large number of post players, and for whatever reason, like, Pardon has just been able to give it to him. I mean, he's done that to Michigan State, too, so I think he's just kind of taken a quantum leap forward, and Michigan wasn't doubling as much as they used to, like, in the previous game.
They doubled off games, I think, on the first possession.
On the first possession, and then they stopped.
Yeah.
And I was like, kind of like, well, why not? Why? And I think Northwestern actually had some good approaches that prevented the double from coming.
Okay.
So they had, like, that play you're probably referencing where they couldn't cut off his left hand was almost from the free throw line. It kind of reminded me of, like, one of those Mitch McGarry takes to the basket where you kind of expect him to kick it out or something, and then he just gets to the hoop immediately. It's hard to double off in that situation because he's so close to the shooters. So it's... You know, he's a good player, but, you know, 0-4 from 3 because Michigan broke his brain.
They also tried to lob over. So Pardon would get inside position and seal Teske out.
They had a couple of those, and that's more on the...
Yeah, and you could see Jaklic get up and wave at the weak side defender to, like, sag off of his man to protect that. And I think it was Iggy, and he didn't in time, and Pardon got a layup on at least one occasion.
Yeah, and there was, like, a blocking foul, and then Matthew's got actually a pretty badass block coming from the weak side. He was still late, but he was he was quick enough. And I think Michigan, you know, they're still working on post defense and the rotations that you need for that. Because, like, how many guys like Pardon has Michigan actually seen this year?
Well, they're going to have one on Saturday.
Yes, sir. Yes,
so,
sir, they are.
Probably a good tune-up.
So the other thing that kind of struck me about Teske is coming out of this game, he has a 6.6 turnover rate, which is like half of what Muhammad Ali Abdur-Rahman had last year.
All right.
Like the quintessential does not turn it over guy. And I think, you know, it's kind of changing my mind a little bit about those jumpers he takes. Because, like, you know, a 10-foot shot is never like your the best possession in the world.
Sure.
But it's not a turnover.
Yeah.
And for bigs to have a turnover rate under like 15 is pretty good. He's at 6.
So he's changing your mind about them for him or for people?
Kind of a little bit in general.
Okay.
Because I feel like if you were to chart like at rim attempts versus like the ratio of at rim attempts to 2-point jumpers, you'd find that guys who go to the rim more turn it over more.
Probably because they're driving and the ball can be swiped.
So like if you just kick it to Teske and he takes an elbow jumper, what's the chance of a turnover there? Basically zero.
Yeah.
But if he puts the ball on the deck and tries to get to a better shot, then you're going to have an increased chance of him turning the ball over.
Sure.
So, you know, the efficiency of 2-point jumpers isn't just in the shooting efficiency. It's also in the lack of turnovers. On the other hand, you know, when you do miss a shot at the rim, the Kobe assist is something that frequently happens, and that's not going to happen when you take a 10-footer.
Not with Teske, anyway. It could with somebody else, potentially.
No, the Kobe assist is a very specific thing.
Oh, like when you're going to the basket and you draw the second defender?
Yeah, and then
there's I see what you're saying.
Easy tip dunk.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a lot of factors, a lot of ins, a lot of outs, but, you know, for guys like Teske and who are able to hit in the 40% range, 38% range, I think that's a valid option. Now, Charles Matthews has not been hitting it in that range. He's been like 25% in the last, probably this whole season. And in this game, he had one mid-range shot. And he missed it, but one mid-range shot kind of late in the shot clock. Completely fine.
Yeah, well, late shot clock is completely different when we're evaluating these.
And then he was able to get to the basket for his other twos. He had like an offensive rebound putback, and he was able to reject the screen and get to the bucket twice when Northwestern really overplayed his right hand. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. Like, if you give him a straight line drive to the basket, he's always going to get to the basket. But there were a couple other takes where he was clearly in a position where normally you might see that fadeaway jumper, like even though he's taken off from the restricted circle, but he made a concerted effort to get it off the backboard and get a shot at the rim, and that was much more effective than the fadeaways were.
Okay.
So I think it's good that he's kind of, I guess, taken that to heart. And we'll see if it continues. I mean, the thing that Michigan would really like to see is if he could start hitting some more of those.
Well, yeah. I mean, I just, you know, it's getting kind of late for...
I mean, he was...
Could he hit them? Sure, but like...
he was like 38% on other twos last year.
Okay.
So, like, this is an, I think, anomalously poor performance for him.
Hmm.
And if he's going to be able to, like, kind of pick that back up, I mean, that is a decent option.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially, as you mentioned, late shot clock. Like, if we get one of those fadeaway jumpers from pretty close from Matthews, it feels like that should be a decent outcome.
But well, he gets up so high, and just his release then it's unblockable, and it seems like he can almost reset when he's in the air because he's there for so long.
Yeah, I mean, it looks pretty.
Yeah.
I mean, watching Charles Matthews jump, I always think about how he was a Kentucky transfer and how that makes a ton of sense.
Has anyone ever mentioned that before?
No, I don't think so.
No. The other thing that is interesting that I thought was that he went left and got a dunk on the baseline.
Yeah, that was one of those are screen rejections that I was mentioning.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
So they were kind of...
But they made a big deal in Evanston, right? Like, you could overhear the coaching staff for Northwestern say that, like, Z and Charles can't go, or they can't go left, right? Only go right.
And, like, that is often the case with Charles, but, like, if you just kind of give him the baseline...
I mean, everybody should be able to.
He's going
to
go dunk on your face.
Yeah.
Because he only needs one dribble, right?
Yep.
It's not like he's changing directions and having to do a lot of fancy stuff. It's just put the ball on the deck and then pick it up and then go dunk. So I think those were probably tactical errors from Northwestern and not what they were desiring. And then Another weird thing from this game is they put a 6'10 guy on Simpson. Yeah. And it kind of worked. Like, I know that
Well, it's an adjustment, because you're not probably not used to it.
Yeah, he felt kind of uncomfortable, and there was that one possession where he got Nance to foul him after kind of putting him on a string. But that took, like, 12 minutes, and before that, it kind of felt like he was a little muted.
Did they switch to that after his one Zareem?
No. That was like, from the drop. I remember Michigan's first possession, and I was like, what is that?
Oh, okay.
Who is that? And it was Pete Nance.
Pete Nance, yeah.
And I was like, he's 6'10". I know that's because Michigan was recruiting him.
Right.
And I was like, honestly, he did a pretty decent job. Like, I think he might be an interesting Roby-type player if he can kind of bulk up a little bit and get with it.
That's probably why Beilein recruited him.
Yeah, I mean, I thought, like, for a guy who clearly should be redshirting and clearly doesn't do much on offense right now, I thought it was a pretty impressive performance from him. So
aside from those two guys, I wrote down that, like, everyone on the team was efficient. Like, the offense was, especially the first half, was about as could have gone as well as expected.
Yeah, and, you know, you have this kind of outburst right at the end of the half where Michigan's defense is kind of driving it.
Right.
So they're getting open court steals, and they're being able to attack kind of unset defense. And we saw that in the Western Michigan game as well.
Okay, yeah.
End of the first half, Michigan's in a big hole, and they're able to turn it up for, like, the last 4 or 5 minutes of the half, and then it's a completely different game after they do that. So not something that you would expect a Michigan team to be able to do 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And now it's just like, you know, if they just hit a reasonable number of their threes, hard to keep up with.
If they make threes, not many teams are going to be able to beat them.
No,
like they're like we talk about them being a one seed. If they hit threes, they are a one seed for sure. And if they don't, they're probably in the conversation. But it seems that, like, it's weird because a lot of those games. So I think one of the things that I was remembering yesterday is, like, they hit a decent number. I think they started 1-7. But finished like 11 of 27. So they ended up shooting like 40%. Mm. But I was like, Northwestern isn't good enough for us to hit all these threes against. Like, all their, like, getting hot games have been against UNC, Purdue, Villanova, like all the big games. Indiana, they shot well. And then, but other teams, they kind of, like Illinois, I mean, we'll get to that later, like, they didn't shoot that well in that game. And I just found that interesting.
I mean, I did have this kind of frustration in the middle of the first half where I was like, I hate playing this team. Because they're very well organized defensively, they're very annoying, and they hit a lot of dumb shots.
Okay.
And then Michigan had the outburst that their defense caused,
and then
the game was over.
Yeah.
And it's
50 in the first half.
50 in the first half, and then they just didn't score for 10 minutes. They had 9 points in the next 10 minutes of the ball game.
But
it
I mean,
didn't really matter.
Yeah, I mean, that was it. Got a little close. What did it get down to? Like,
I think 13.
13 or something. Yeah. So, but I was never like,
No, and, you know, it's a thing where I think Northwestern is a pretty decent basketball team, and you don't get the kind of mental credit for it because it's like, okay, they're 10-7 or whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you look at their numbers, they're like 60th in the country. So, like, giving them the business is just means something.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's going to be the case for a lot of these games. Like, even Illinois. Like, to go to a KenPom borderline top 100 team and win is not an easy thing. Even if Illinois is not very good at basketball.
Should we talk a little bit about that?
Sure.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online, it's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
If you get in foul trouble in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man on your bench. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout-out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
To be the day molecules decide to change the form, laws of physics lose its way, and youthful indiscretion now is suddenly the norm. A wizard good kid sprouted horns, yeah, yeah. And today was supposed to be just another day.
So Michigan beats Illinois by 10 at Illinois, which was exactly the Ken Pom line, and that's kind of what
that's your target, right?
Right. Well, so you think, oh, it's kind of a boring game, not a very good game for Michigan, where they have like 15 turnovers, they don't look very good, kind of a little bit concerned, and then it's like that's what the number 7 team on the nation is exactly supposed to do to that team. So, still pretty good. And to have the consistency that Michigan's had where everybody they play, they've beaten by 8 or more except Northwestern, like at Northwestern. Like, to consistently have games that aren't even in doubt is something that I think is very special. And the reason is because they're so balanced. So 6 different guys had more than 9 points against Illinois. And that is something that I think you see kind of game in, game out, where Michigan is able to take their top 6 guys and sprinkle in some Eli Brooks, and every one of those guys is able to chip in. And when somebody's having a bad game, like Jordan Poole had a terrible game.
Right.
Here.
It's about time.
Like, Teske steps up. Simpson steps up. And these 2 consecutive games are Teske and Simpson games. And, like, how much have you thought about Iggy in the past 2 games? It's like, occasionally he'll swoop in for a nice layup, and you're like, okay, go Iggy. But it's not like you're like, oh, Iggy's got to do something, or Poole has to do something. There's no point when Michigan plays where it's like a specific guy has to do something.
Well, they kind of have 6 starters. Like, Livers doesn't start because they just have really good players other places. But wouldn't Livers be a starter on a number of teams?
I think pretty much every other team in the conference.
Right. So they have, I mean, so you could start Livers instead of Matthews. You could start him instead of Poole or instead of Iggy. I mean, it's not.
Well, and he gets like 58% of the minutes, right? So he has like starters minutes.
Sure. That's what I mean. And so having 6 starters, there's not a drop when you go to your first bench guy. And that's, I mean, they have a pretty short, like, Craig Ross rotation, but, like,
the closest anyone will ever get to the Craig Ross ideal of basketball is this team. And he's probably like, I'm right!
Well, I mean, I'm just looking at the minutes now, and like against Illinois, Austin Davis had 2, and Eli Brooks had 3, and every other minute was played by one of those 6 guys.
Yeah.
So.
And it was really nice having Livers back. I know he didn't do a ton, but like
he does.
But I mean, in terms of like usage. It's just a luxury to have a guy who's like a 50%.
So he hits a couple threes against Northwestern, but against Illinois, he goes 4 of 8 and gets 9 points, and 0 of 3. From 3.
Yeah.
So he found other ways to score, and he got to the line, made a free throw, which, hey. But, I mean, he's in 5 rebounds. So, I mean, he's kind of one of those, like, almost Sean Marion-esque players that just kind of fits into whatever position is necessary and can check pretty much, what, a 2 through 5?
Yeah.
I mean, that's
certain fives.
Well, okay.
Like, when Michigan plays State, I don't really want him checking Ward. It just doesn't feel good to me.
We're just used to having bigger guys than Ward.
Yeah, I mean, it's he's a different kind of challenge than a lot of centers are these days. Like Juwan Morgan, sure, didn't play in that game.
Sure.
But, he's an incredibly valuable piece because you can play him at 3 different positions. He's a team guy who's not mad that he's not starting. And he shoots. Like, having a guy that size who can stretch it out to the 3-point line is something that we saw last year. I mean, Mo's a little bit bigger, but
yeah,
he's also playing the 5, so it just changes what you can do.
Which might transition well to our next point of, like, okay, Davis played 2 minutes against Illinois, but how many minutes did Brandon Johns play?
0.
And Davis gets 2 after the Brandon Johns game, as we, or as people have labeled it.
Yeah, it's a little bit odd to me. We did talk about how the offense just kind of seems to like not quite be clicking when he's in there because he's a freshman.
And a couple of his dunks and the block were kind of isolated exclamation points. They weren't like a lot of transition play isn't the right word, but like you don't see like good play after good play after good play. It's just kind of like you see like a pop. Oh, that was a big athletic dunk, and you kind of remember it. It's not like he's always in good position. He's setting a good screen, and then, oh, nope, that didn't work. Now that we'll roll back. And he's like, it's just kind of like spots. And I think that might be why, as Davis doesn't necessarily bring a lot, but he flows in the offense a little better.
I guess.
Maybe not.
Pretty much the rest of our fan base is like, where was Brandon Johns? And I was kind of like, where is Brandon Johns?
I mean, I don't necessarily disagree, but I'm trying to, like, rectify the whole situation.
You're just trying to explain it?
Yeah. I mean, maybe there isn't an explanation, but, like, it'd be nice to know. I mean, not that I don't trust Beilein, but it's a little
The one thing I could think is that their center, Georgie.
Here we go.
What's his name?
Come on, give it a shot. I'll even let you look at it.
You're going to let me look at it?
Yeah.
Georgie Behanishvili?
I think it's Behanishvili.
Behanishvili.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's better.
I think so. Something so, pretty close to that.
So, Air Georgia. He's more like Ground Georgia. He's
the Air Other Georgia?
No, he's definitely...
Not that Georgia?
He was definitely Ground Georgia. Not an athlete. A skilled player on the bucket, but not an athlete. I just feels like he would be a better defensive matchup for Davis.
Davis to bring. Yeah, yeah.
How many fouls did Davis have in his 2 minutes?
Was it 2? He just had 1.
Just the 1? Oh, well, that's...
Maybe it's like... Maybe he played a minute and a second and it rounds up to 2 minutes.
That's still a 20-minute per 40 foul rate.
Yeah.
Which is what he's averaging in the Big Ten.
Yeah, I mean...
it's kind of amazing.
I don't want to, like, diss the guy or anything, but, like, I mean, do you kind of expect anything else? Like, that's kind of what we've...
Well, I mean, if we haven't really seen a whole lot...
Of not that?
Of not that, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, if there's someone who's going to foul out in 5 minutes...
Well, we might find out on...
Ethan Happ is a good person to foul out against in 5 minutes.
Oh, man.
Like, if Wisconsin gets the 1-on-1, Davis comes on the floor. And Davis knows what to do.
Yep.
Yeah.
So... they also had, you mentioned this earlier a little bit, they had a lot of turnovers.
Yeah, well, that's what Illinois does.
Right.
So their whole defense is predicated on turning the ball over and they'll let you get dunks and whatnot. And it's tough to play against, and Michigan struggled early. I think they had 11 in the first half.
Yeah.
And then they obviously got right. That happened last year.
And it happened earlier this year in another game where they had a lot of first half turnovers and then
settled down.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just kind of what Underwood does. Like, people are writing him off. I feel like I feel like it would be hard for anyone to cope with this roster, and given the fact that they're not completely horrible, they're probably going to be decent, but whatever.
There was a quote, I think, was it somebody on the bench or one of the players was saying during the game that Z can't go left, and Z and Matthews or Poole and Matthews or somebody were like standing there and they heard it.
That was from Brendan Quinn. Well, I think a lot of people reported it because at Illinois, they put the media right behind the coaches, which is a great, it's a great idea.
Yeah.
I mean,
you probably get a few more hidden gems.
Well, so Brendan Quinn's story in The Athletic immediately after this game was basically just 40 minutes of looking at Beeline. It was a great story. Yeah. It was worth the price of admission to The Athletic. And the reason that that story came about is because of Illinois' press seating.
Okay.
And I kind of wish that Michigan would do the same thing, but too late now.
I'm sure the press would like to sit a little closer to the floor.
Well, I think, you know, it's something where you get better coverage of your program if you do that.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't do it if I had, you know, Huggy Bear as my coach. But John Beilein, yeah, we can swing that. Yeah, no, it'll be fine.
A little more family friendly.
Yeah. You know, it'll be fine. So one thing that kind of jumped out to me is Simpson weirdly reminded me of Darius Morris in the Illinois game. So he's trapped kind of down on the baseline.
Yeah.
And he has that wraparound pass to Teske.
That was nice.
And he was talking about it kind of after the game. And he's like, so I knew that the shooters were covered and then I was doubled so that Teske had to be open. And then he's able to change his arm angle and kind of swing it out wide and actually get it to Teske. There were a couple more assists in this game. And he had 8 assists versus 2 turnovers against Illinois, where he's able to use a weird arm angle to fit it into a place where normally would be difficult to get to. And Darius was great at that. That was his whole game because he was a 6'5 point guard.
Right. And so he could easily change angles.
Right. Like his arm angles were really effective at getting past legs. And
although we've also seen Z able to change arm angles on shooting. So,
well, yeah, I mean,
it can't be that much of a surprise if he adjusts it to passing the ball.
He's got less arm length, but
well, that's true.
His ability in this game to kind of find those pockets of space that might otherwise be cut off if you're not a creative point guard was really effective. And I think that is something that we're going to really enjoy over the next year and a half. Because, you know, Z's probably never going to be a 20% usage guy. But if his assist rate is like, you know, top 40-ish, if he could just push that a little bit higher with, you know, the creative passes that we're beginning to see, then, you know, he kind of feels like a really old school point guard. You know, when they used to point out that there were scoring point guards?
Yeah, yeah.
And that was like, oh, he's a scoring point guard.
Yeah, yeah.
Now everybody's a scoring point guard. And I wouldn't call him a scoring guard, but, you know, he's able to get his usage in and be also one of the best defensive point guards in the country.
It used to be said about guys like that, like, those are guys you want to play with because they find a way to get you the ball.
Right. And, you know, I think that's something that you want to see develop, and I think Illinois was a really good example.
And I think that there's definitely, he probably will, because he starts out as kind of like a defensive menace, and not that it hasn't dropped away, but I think that his offensive arsenal has slightly widened this year. You see him a lot more comfortable with the ball, like getting into the lane and spinning around, and then, like you're saying, dropping arm angles and finding guys in different ways. And it sounds like in this way, or in this circumstance that you just described, that it was almost that he didn't see Teske was open, but he knew he was open because he knew where the players on the floor were. So by process of elimination, nobody was on Teske.
Yeah, I think he thinks the game at a high level, and he's obviously just put in an enormous amount of work over this offseason. Like, you don't get that. You don't hit 70% of your hook shots without working on it, right?
Man.
He had a couple of nasty ones in these two games. We do have a couple of negatives from this game. One, Charles Matthews is 5 of 5 at the rim in this game and has a couple of offensive rebounds and some putbacks in there. He's 0 of 5 in the mid-range. Mm-hmm. So we touched on this in the Northwestern segment where he's at like 25% on other twos this season. And, you know, some level of shooting from two is something you have to do. But Matthews, especially with his athleticism, should be trying to dunk up people's faces a lot more often.
Yeah. I think the only drawback to that is what happens if he doesn't finish? He might get fouled, and then
he's a 62%. So
he's getting better.
It's not the worst. I mean, Matthews did get an immediate charging call in this game. Like, it was like 30 seconds in.
Yeah, and Beilein yanked him, right?
Yeah, I mean,
that's what's going to happen.
And so then I think maybe he doesn't want to pick up another charge, and he's like, all right, I better fade away from the basket. No. Charges.
Charges.
Commit charges. I'm willing for Matthews to commit two charges a game.
All right. So that's the okay. So he just, but then he's gonna have to be a little more careful on the defensive end.
Yeah,
otherwise, he's gonna get auto benched.
He's not gonna get auto benched.
No,
offensive fouls don't count against your personal total.
Interesting. Okay, that's a new development.
There's someone from a foreign country is listening to this podcast. Speaking, and like, that is interesting.
Speaking of fouls, Michigan went 18 of 22 at the line.
Yeah, that was the difference between this being like a nail biter and then the. Consistently, like, okay, we're up 10 points the second
but
half.
That's as well as they shot from the line in I can remember.
Well, a lot of that
at a decent
was
volume
who was shooting. So, you know, Simpson had a couple towards the end, and I think Teske hit a couple, but it was largely Poole and Brezdeikis getting to the line, if I recall.
Yeah, well, it was pretty evenly split. Iggy had, he was 4 of 5, Matthews was 4 of 6, and Poole was 5 of 6. Livers had one. Yeah, and then yeah. And Z and Teske had two. So, yeah, but I mean, everybody was making. I mean, it was kind of like you're waiting for them to miss some free throws, and everybody just kept dropping them. And yeah, you're right. Good shooters, but even they haven't been perfect this year.
Well, no, they haven't been perfect, but, you know, I don't think that's so far off that it's completely crazy. I do like that kind of every game from Matthews, it kind of feels like he's no longer a 50% three-point shooter. He just feels like... He's
50% free throw,
60 and change, kind of guy.
Yeah, just like slowly moving up.
Well, he's 0-5 from in the first game. So if you kind of like discount that, you know, he's at like 64-65%, which kind of feels like where he should be.
Yeah.
The other negative thing was kind of everything Jordan Poole did, and this comes after like two solid months of just annihilating everybody. So that, you know, that'll happen. Kind of the disappointing thing to me was not that he was missing some shots, but. You know, he kind of got ate up by Ayo Dosunmu in the first half.
Who had a pretty good first half.
Well, I mean, that's his whole game. Like, you can see it in his stats. He's really good in transition, uh-huh. and he tries to get to the rim, and he converts in transition. And then when he gets in the half court, you can't really do that much. And, like, you know, there's one bucket that he got where Poole kind of, like, went for kind of a half-hearted reach-in.
I think there were more than one.
Yeah,
there were a couple. There were a few where he kind of... like Olayed him a little bit and swiped after him, but
yeah, I think Michigan's biggest priority in the first half was they were trying to take away Trent Frazier because he's a guy who was an off the dribble 3-point shooter who actually hits 40%. So he's like a guy.
So if he gets going,
right? So that's who they put Matthews on, and it's sure. like we're going to turn him off, and they turned him off for most of the half. They switched it to Matthews on this guy's name just drives me crazy. Dosunmu. In the second half, and he had 4 points. Huh. And he didn't score for like 12 minutes. So there's a big, big difference between Poole and Matthews. I think that was a clear indicator of that. Not that Poole is bad, but he was bad in this game against a very particular kind
He's inconsistent.
I think it was just a different level of athlete. So
okay, so he's used to checking?
I mean, you know, Io is a kid who is a... borderline 5-star,
yeah.
USA basketball, 6'4", has NBA athleticism, and when you get him in transition, it's just like meep meep, and he's able to go.
Yeah,
and I think Poole was a little bit unprepared for that. So, but you know, Michigan always has option B, and they went to it, and it was really.
It's really nice to have a Matthews who is like a legit just defensive stopper.
I mean,
he's done that to Langford.
I feel like I don't fully appreciate. Matthews, like, even though I'm thinking like I should appreciate Matthews, I feel like I am, it's impossible for me to do it. But next year when he's in the NBA and some, like, when Romeo Langford, next year's version of Romeo Langford, like, goes off on Michigan for 30 points, I'm gonna be like, oh, now I fully appreciate
I'm
Charles
gonna go
Matthews.
Look up some Charles Matthews highlight or defensive highlight
defensive
videos
highlight. So it's impossible to fully appreciate a guy who's such an excellent defensive stopper, I think, as a layman.
Yeah.
Until it's gone. Like, I won't...
It's very MGO blog.
I mean, I won't be like... like, I'll be heartbroken about Charles Matthews mid-season when Michigan takes a terrible loss.
Because they just can't shut a guy down and somebody goes off.
And not before. Like, when Matthews... I'll be like, it'll be fine. Michigan's gonna just patch that hole, and he wasn't that great of a offensive player. He's not that efficient. took too many mid-range jumpers. And then at some point, I'd be like, I was so wrong. I'm sorry, Charles. I didn't mean to say it like that.
So I thought it was interesting that Michigan, well, I guess it's probably the free throws is what the difference was. But in the Northwestern game, they score 80 points. In the Illinois game, they score 79. And it seemed like they scored a lot more points against Northwestern than they did against Illinois.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of that thing we were talking about after the Air Force game.
Where when you get your points,
doesn't really matter, but yeah. It feels so different.
Yeah.
So having 50 points at halftime is like, we scored an infinite number of points.
We're probably going to get 105.
But, you know, you're in a, you know, a slugfest with Air Force at halftime. It's like, this sucks and it's terrible, but all the points count the same. But yeah, the feeling is just completely different.
Yeah.
So I'm not criticizing anyone for this. I mean, I do it myself all the time. But
well, we're still humans. We still have basketball feels.
Right. Like the average lead is a big determinant of how you feel about a game. But it's really only the lead at the very end that's like, okay, how good of a game was this? But it doesn't feel like that at all.
So speaking of feels, I think we have to talk about it.
Oh, no.
No?
I mean, you're going to do it anyway. I can't stop you.
I'm trying to get it into its own segment.
No.
It might not be there yet.
No, we have actual important stuff to talk about.
Oh,
so.
Okay. So
we can't have an entire segment about...
You know what the funny thing about this is that I didn't even think about it.
This is your brand.
I know. But, well, you know, football's done in the last while. So
yeah.
My mom texts me, and she's just like, there were a lot of sad fouls. And I was like, oh, my gosh, there were. That's amazing.
This is your personal brand to your mother.
Maybe I've inherited it. So, and I was like, yeah. And so then I was like, oh, I'll just tweet it. And then, like, you thought it was funny. And then a bunch of people started liking it. And I was like, whoa, okay. Well, that's...
I saw a tweet that said, your personal brand is what people tweet at you. Whenever it happens. So my personal brand on Twitter is like complaining.
Oh, hooray.
Potatoes.
Potato. Okay.
And otters.
And well, otters, yeah. So now you just always post the otter?
Well, I mean, well, we should talk about like the murder otter. Because the murder otter was authorized after this game by myself.
Okay.
Because, I mean, the Northwestern game.
Yeah.
Because it just had to be. Like when Xavier does that, okay, that's a murder otter game.
Yeah.
Not just a standard otter game. Even though it wasn't like a big game, it was a big opponent.
So back to your stuff.
Yeah,
the sad fouls. So the thing about it was kind of weird. Was like they didn't really start fouling until like 25 seconds left.
It was about a minute.
I thought it was less than that.
I mean,
but it was 10 points.
It was 10 points. Yeah.
Which
I mean, Izzo did that last year at Breslin.
Yeah, but Izzo,
like he followed for like solid minutes.
Yeah, Izzo started like 3 minutes or something, and he did that a couple years ago when they won there too. Well, maybe it was the Stauskas game. I think it was the Stauskas game when Stauskas blew kisses to him. He was fouling for multiple minutes. But that's Izzo. He doesn't count. He's in a category of his own.
Okay.
But this was just kind of weird because they were kind of out of the game. Like they get kind of close.
Timeouts to set up the press when there's no way they can win the game.
Yeah, and that kind of thing. And then they start fouling, and then on top of it, Michigan makes their free throw surprise, and so everybody's knocking down free throws. So usually you give it what, two, maybe three chances, and it just kind of kept going. And you're just like, what?
Come on, man.
What is this?
Yeah.
Like, is someone paying you because like we didn't get enough commercials in, so we have to lengthen this game? Or
what it is they're like 4-10 or 4-12 or whatever, and it's like, all right, we got to try hard. And that, like, that's.
I guess. But if it's a 6-point game, I get it, because you know, guy misses a couple and you knock down a three, and now the pressure's on. But 10, I mean, they could have missed four or five.
The fouling did go on way, way too long.
Yeah, so, sad fouls.
Well, there was a sad timeout in the Indiana game.
Yeah. What did you yell? What are you going to do, set up a press?
Is that what I sound like to you?
Sometimes you go to that higher pitch thing. You even did it in this segment.
Well, yeah, but that's...
But when you, when
I'm
you
playing
say something
a character.
Funny, well, right.
Like Alex Jones.
You did it at an AFC Ann Arbor game when a guy took a shot from like 40 out. You're like, what is this, La Liga?
That's
very you.
I mean, that's a very sad version of me, which I guess is your brand.
I just find the unfortunates.
It's really useful when you read the Sneetches as well.
Good grief! Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
So, we're done with that?
Yeah, I think we're done with this segment.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships, and we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
Is your online store sluggish, outdated, underperforming? You may be suffering from chronic crappy website disorder. One in three online stores built by your brother's friend's nephew currently suffers from chronic crappy website. But now, there's hope. Introducing Human Element. Huel has helped hundreds suffering from CCW to turn their online stores around, creating fast, secure, and engaging online experiences that turn visitors into customers and put products back at the top of their search engine game.
Before Huel, I had abandoned carts, browser errors, and poorly animated GIFs. Now, with Huel, I can focus on what I'm actually good at, running my business.
Jeffrey, would you be a deer and pull the Ferrari around?
Side effects may include increased traffic, customer conversions, better ROI, compliments, elation, and early retirement. Why live with the disappointment of chronic crappy website disorder? Speak to your Human Element consultant today to see if Huel is right for you.
I'm just living to fulfill my dreams. I'm just trying to have the best of things. None of y'all can't take shit from me. Life's a bitch, she ain't for free. So I'ma ride till the wheels fall off. While the rest get weak and go soft. Your petite style can get you beat down. My heat style have you hugging on the street now.
Keep asking me, how does it feel? How does what feel? Not having this great for a meal? Not being locked down to a f***ed up deal? The biggest man in Los Angeles is not Shaquille. We had to reinvent the wheel. Draft new blueprints. Made a whole album. Spent half what you spent. Then sent the rest to my people to invest with it. Custom fitted if you
want. All right, this is a slightly premature, but Michigan has made a couple of significant coaching changes.
Wait. Well, let's just get on the same page here. Are you going to talk about football?
What? We prepped this.
Okay, well, I just wanted
so
to make
you knew
sure.
I was going
to
do this.
I didn't know if you'd actually go through with it. I figured we'd get a curveball and we'd break down, like, sewing or something.
I asked you
like
for
that.
Recipes once. Yeah.
You did.
And you were like,
and we talked about scrambled eggs, which you said you needed to try my scrambled
I
eggs.
I do.
Yeah, it's been a while and you haven't asked. I will make them for you.
I'm not really over at your house in the mornings very often.
We can have scrambled eggs for dinner.
Well, you're not really at my house for dinner very often.
We can have post-podcast scrambled eggs.
Well, we can't scramble eggs at a hotel.
You're just trying to get out of this.
No, I'm actually... See, now you're doing it. Anyway.
All the tables just keep spinning.
Oh, my God. All right, so Michigan has hired a couple of young dudes. Unfortunately, young dudes from my perspective.
They are young.
This is the first time Michigan has ever had a coordinator younger than me. So much.
It's a coming of age moment
indignity.
For you.
Coming of age. It's a going of age.
Going of age moment.
So they hire.
Josh Gattis?
Josh Gattis. I forgot his first name.
Now, what is his title?
His title is offensive coordinator.
What is it not?
Offensive assistant to the coordinator, co.
Okay. I thought that was hopeful.
Significant?
Well, it's not significant yet because we don't know, and it could be just a curveball. But that's the one thing we've kind of talked about postseason that I've gotten to, that I've dragged out of you at some point, is that sort of the way that Michigan would put their offense together on game day was a little took a little bit of time and a little slow, maybe some might say. And we thought maybe it's because there's
like statistics
3 to 4.
Yeah,
offensive guys.
We've talked about this, and I'm not sure how different it is from other schools. Like, I'm sure at Oklahoma that someone's talking to Lincoln Riley about, like, this is what I like, this is what I don't like. So,
sure.
But they don't have enormous tempo problems.
They're probably not having a conversation about it.
I mean, it's good that Gattis is young enough that he's definitely played Madden. There's no question about whether he's versed in these things, and I think he might be able to speed us up a little bit. The best thing about him is that there's no old boy network here. This is a completely kind of out of left field hire, and he was in pretty high demand. He was at Alabama as the co-OC. Loxley wanted to bring him along.
Didn't he temporarily?
Yeah, for about 3 hours. Yeah. And then Michigan kind of swoops in, and it's like, whoa. And it was kind of a risk because he was only kind of a offensive coordinator this year. Mm-hmm. Before that, he was the wide receiver coach at Penn State, which is very good because mm-hmm. their wide receivers were awesome. And then as soon as they left, they were garbage.
Going back a few years.
Yeah, so you know that's a good thing. His youth is obviously very good for a lot of different reasons, recruiting, ability to grok modern football, ability to have the time.
We'll bring up the Madden thing again.
Yeah. Well, okay. You know.
It's worth it.
It's worth it. And, you know, he's a guy who had a really good offense this year. Now, it was a really good offense with Jerry Jeudy and Tua.
They had a few players on that offense, like, if I remember.
How much of that is him and how much of that is not? But they did a lot of RPOs and stuff like that. And also, he was kind of under Joe Moorhead's wing at Penn State. So if there's anyone in college football I'd like my offensive coordinator to have recently learned from, it's probably Lincoln Riley. But Joe Moorhead is number two.
Okay. That's fair.
And so it's an outside-the-box hire. It could blow up. You know, the downside risk is pretty small because Jim Harbaugh is around, so the worst-case scenario is it's still Jim Harbaugh's offense.
Also, they're going to have a bunch of talent, so...
Yeah,
you're going to have guys that are going to be able to make plays against. The blow-up part could come in big games, which would suck again, but you think that they're going to have enough talent to be able to beat most of the teams.
And he's like hashtagging things like speed and space.
And Giles Jackson was very happy about that.
So, I mean, Michigan did just bring in a bunch of slot receivers.
Yep.
They have a spread quarterback. They have three awesome receivers. It seems like what you want for this upcoming season is a college spread passing spread.
Modern offense.
And I think he's it. And if Pep goes out, which I think is probably going to be the case, he's been interviewing places, he's been seen on NFL sidelines, he's probably about to be demoted.
Well, he was a co-OC, right?
A co-see.
So, a co-see. So we had, didn't last year they had three co-sees? Was McElwain a co-see?
Technically, maybe. I don't know.
And Pep. Warner, or was he just OL?
Well, Warner became the run game coordinator, which is a co-OC spot, but he had to because the stuff that Michigan was doing in their first game was dumb as dirt.
So they had to audible quickly.
Yeah. So they had to add him in, and I think that's fine with me. Like, if he builds your run game, it's probably going to be pretty good, and then you need someone who can build off that run game, and that's kind of what my frustration was with last year's passing offense is, like, it didn't...
You had a run game, you had a pass game.
Right.
And they were very different.
Remember that Northwestern game where every time Michigan went play action, their linebackers were 15 yards deep?
Yep.
There you go.
Well, I mean, and like Seth would even said some things about, like, they never really did any passing concept off of the Art Keeper and stuff. So.
They did exactly no passing concept.
Zero, apparently.
Off of the Art Keeper, which is like... Really?
Which was probably arguably the most successful thing they did last year. Maybe the down G a little bit, but...
And that had to be imported mid-season by Warner, so like... What exactly would you say you do here, Pep? Right?
Yeah.
So Gattis is the hire on offense. The hire that Michigan has announced on defense is Anthony Campanile, who... This is just the curse.
What's your take on him, Brian?
The curse of being me was like, that name sounds familiar. A New Jersey guy named Campanile, and I have a negative association with it. Why do I have a negative association with it? Well, his brother... who's literally named Nunzio. I'm not making this up. His name is frickin' Nunzio Campanile. Was one of the guys when Michigan was having its satellite camp in New Jersey, and like Rutgers scheduled a satellite camp with Ohio State on the same day, and they like asked all the coaches about it. And Nunzio was like, well, Michigan can conspire with Paramus Catholic however they want. And it's like, what? What are you talking about? So he was a little up in his britches about Michigan. And Michigan has now hired his brother. And now he's also an assistant at Rutgers. So that Thanksgiving dinner table. Awkward.
So it's there's going to be a throwdown next year.
Possibly.
Well, at least you don't have to go to Rutgers.
But I remember... Why did I remember this?
Why did you remember
this? I don't know. I was like, this sounds familiar. And I Googled and I was like, why do I give my brain to these things?
Why are you telling Google that you want to know these things? Now it's going to keep offering you this information.
But he's also very young. He's 36. He's a guy who could play, who could do linebackers or safeties. Michigan again poaches from BC. And I know a guy who's actually a pretty good BC source. And it's come in handy twice. And the first time it was like Don Brown.
And it wasn't even hockey.
And Don Brown's a dude, and this guy is also a dude. So he's going to be a really good recruiter. He'll be a candidate at BC when Adazio retires or gets fired, but that's never going to happen because they're happy being 7-5. So, you know, he's a guy who, upwardly mobile, will be a good recruiter in a really important area for Michigan. Seems like a good hire. Now, they have 2-ish open spots. Mm-hmm. So Ben McDaniels was reported as the new wide receiver coach, but has not been officially announced.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's like kind of waiting on Pep to find a landing spot or whatever, but I would assume that he's in.
It's still early.
Another young up-and-comer type, kind of an NFL legacy, which is not my preference.
No.
But, you know, the nice thing about Gattis is you have a wide receiver coach who's proven.
Who's done it before.
And he's proven as a really good wide receiver coach, too. So I think if all you have is that wide receiver spot is a recruiter, that would also be fine. So that's a luxury that Gattis gives you. And then the other spot is a defensive line spot that Sam Webb says will definitely go to a minority because they don't have any.
On defense.
And yeah, that's something that, you know, I think it's pretty obvious that having someone who can relate to people on their level, I think, is important. And, you know, growing up as a black kid in America is different than growing up as a white kid in America. So it's important to have that perspective. And I think Michigan will go find someone who can provide it.
Are there names about?
Yeah, there are names that Sam put out there. I'd rather just let people, if you're
just
interested,
let it go. You can look up Sam's stuff.
Yeah, get a 24/7 subscription or listen to TK. It's not my place to say that. But
it sounds like they have some targets.
Yeah, they have some targets. So okay. And it'll probably be done pretty soon. So, you know, overall, like, I honestly don't mind. Like, losing Washington after 1 year kind of sucks because he seemed like a good guy. But
also, he's an Ohio State guy.
But, yeah, he's an Ohio State guy.
He was never going to be here that long, I didn't think.
And, like, Madison getting shipped out to be Ohio State's defensive coordinator? Man. Like, yeah, that's kind of, like, douche.
I don't know how I feel about that.
That's, like, a douchebag move, but, like, you're telling me that Ohio State is hiring a 70-year-old defensive coordinator who hasn't coordinated defense in 5 years, and when he did, it was a 4-3 under?
Do you think that's like just trying to take a shot at Michigan?
I don't know what it was. Well, I mean, what I've heard is that Ryan Day actually wanted to take a shot at Don Brown.
Oh.
And that didn't work.
Why didn't that work?
Well, you know, because he's not.
Brown was like, nope.
Yep. And then, like, Urban Meyer pulled the trigger on Madison, which seems strange. And then the co-DC with Madison is just some dude who's really never been a coordinator. I think he came from the NFL.
Okay.
And it's like, okay, maybe he's got it. Maybe Madison's got it. But this just seems like a situation where, like, I'm not scared of that. Like, I'm not scared of Brady Hoke's defensive coordinator.
No. I mean, just like Ohio State just seems to.
I know, but like of
roll
all the
sixes, man.
Of all the people that like they could have hired, like, I'm not, because Madison is only going one direction.
Did you think the Grinch thing was weird?
It was weird.
Like, they bring him in. I thought that was like, that's a guy that you bring in if you have an extra chance. Even if you're just like, give us a year or two,
yeah,
pay you more money, come on our staff, maybe we win something.
Well, he's the defensive coordinator at Washington State and doing an incredible job for their level of talent.
Yeah.
They bring him, I'm like, oh, crap.
Of course.
Of course. And then, you know, I think that they tried to offload Schiano into a head job, and then the Tennessee thing blew up.
So they're kind of.
I think they were trying to get Schiano like a Mac job.
Okay.
And then Tennessee's like, oh, that sounds like a good idea. And they fire their athletic director because it's such a bad idea.
Yeah.
And then they're stuck with Schiano. And because there's this old boy network where you can't ever just, like, axe somebody, you know, they stick with him. And he's kind of like, I mean, they have this terrible defense most of the year, and it just kind of seems like there's too many cooks. It kind of felt like the Drevno Frey offensive line situation.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, this is not a healthy situation.
Yeah, I feel like I've heard things along that where him and Grinch maybe didn't see eye to eye on some things.
So and then he goes to Oklahoma.
I bet they paid him.
And Ohio State people are like, yeah, we didn't really want him back. I'm like, come on. Like, I would be much more concerned if
Ohio State people, meaning fans insiders?
Media at 24/7 are like, yeah, this guy didn't have an opportunity to come back. And I'm like, okay, buddy. He just went to Oklahoma. It's not like he went to San Jose State.
And if you've watched Oklahoma, that's probably their priority.
That was the number one thing they wanted to do this offseason.
Is to basically go out and get the best guy available, pay whatever they needed to, because clearly they don't have issues on the other side of the ball.
Right. So, like, you're trying to, like, downplay this. No. I mean, from, you know, I'm completely still in the black pit of negative expectations when it comes to Michigan football, and will probably be for the rest of my life. Let's just be honest. But in terms of, like, the best case scenario for Michigan fans in terms of what Ohio State is doing after Urban Meyer, this is it.
Yeah.
Like,
a bunch of unproven stuff, a bunch of question marks.
Yeah, 70.
It could work out.
Defensive coordinator.
It probably will work out because Ohio State,
who hasn't been a coordinator for 5 years, and
it's just he
ran a 4.3 under.
We don't need to talk about it.
We used to put Jake Ryan over slot receivers. Like, it was.
I mean, that was a while ago.
It was a while ago, but that was his last. That was his last thing, you know. Like, I just, I'm not scared. I'm not scared of Greg Madison as a defensive.
No, it's just he was one of us.
And he wasn't, though.
He was good. No.
I mean, he left for Notre Dame before, right? And he would bring him back, and he's like, oh, I'm going to stay here because of my family. And he's like, nah.
Yeah. So, like, I don't know what I don't know.
I
feel that's going to trigger some emotions.
They paid him more, but, like, what's he going to do with that money? I don't know. He's already got a nice house. He's already able to go and do whatever he wants.
I thought, like, the whole thing was he wanted to retire here because he liked it here.
Well, he also had family here.
Well.
And apparently they can go pound sand.
Pound sand.
Well, like, I just telling me that I should be bothered by the fact that, you know, Greg Madison got a 3x raise at Ohio State and decided to take it. No. Did I want Michigan to pay Madison $1.5 million? No, I did not.
No.
So, adios, buddy.
If you're looking for a mortgage and you're a Michigan fan, there's only one place to go. Homeshore Lending. Fair and honest, Homeshore Lending is local, efficient, and small enough that you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest. Matt bleeds maize and blue, and so does his family.
Hi, this is Matt Demarest, owner of Homeshore Lending. We're a local mortgage company based here in Ann Arbor on State Street, but we serve the entire state of Michigan, helping people buy or refinance their homes. We care about doing things the right way and treating people the right way, but we also care deeply about the Wolverines, and I wanted to introduce you to a couple of the biggest Michigan fans I know.
Hi, I'm Cooper, I'm 10.
I'm Colby, and I'm 8.
Who's the best team in the whole country?
Michigan!
Homeshore Lending at 2723 South State Street in Ann Arbor. For more info, go to homeshorelending.com. That's HOMESUREELENDING.com. Or call Matt at 734-531-9950. Homeshore Lending. NMLS number 1161358. Equal housing lender.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
You disarrayed your fragile frame.
So we were going to have Alex on to talk Big Ten basketball, but for our fourth segment, I think there's something a little bit more pressing, and that, of course, is...
This whole gymnastics stuff?
Yes.
So what kind of is this whole situation?
You haven't been following?
I mean, I followed it a little bit, but let's just kind of get to the bottom of how it always is.
So the Daily spots this woman, Rhonda Fain, at Michigan, I don't know, it's a practice or an event or anything.
Okay.
And they, like, write up a story about it. Like, oh, Michigan. And then Michigan announces that they've hired this woman.
Post the
article.
Thing.
Right.
Okay.
And then they announce that they've ended a consulting relationship with her after announcing that they hired her. So this is kind of like...
So she was brought in for a day.
Probably.
Or a little bit longer.
Yeah. And the way that the media has kind of framed this bothers me a lot because it's like Rhonda Fain with ties to Larry Nassar. I'm like, what? Like, that's not... And like... Multiple local reporters have put this in their Twitter, like she has ties to Larry Nassar. I'm like, that is not at all what happened. So I actually went and I read her congressional testimony.
Okay.
Because she was on the same panel as Luana Simon and the president of USA Gymnastics.
All right.
Who got fired, but his name is Steve Penny. And both of them were subpoenaed to come. And Penny took the fifth. And Fain was there of her own volition and had documentation about the things that she did. And so her story, and she backed this up with documentation, and I don't think that anybody is disputing it, is that she takes this job as the VP.
Mm-hmm.
And 37 days later, she gets a report about Larry Nassar. A month after that, two more gymnasts, including Allie Raisman, contact her about it. And in all three of these instances, she immediately reports it to her superior.
Okay.
Who is unfortunately Steve Penny. Steve Penny has been arrested for obstructing justice in this or tampering with evidence.
Okay.
So he's been with USA Gymnastics forever and is probably deeply implicated in all this and probably should go to jail for a million years.
Okay.
So she puts up the flagpole to this dude, and this dude conducts an independent investigation that 5 weeks later says that they couldn't take the testimony of Raisman and this other gymnast whose name I forget at face value and couldn't pursue it, which was like, whoa, what? And then a third one comes forward and they feel like, all right, fine, we have to. And this is incredibly fucked up on the part of USAG. And at that point, they contact the FBI, which is about 5 weeks after the Raisman allegations. Now, Larry Nassar has not taken off his duties for some year after that. And this is kind of the point of contention that Raisman brought up at some red carpet event.
Okay.
With like a Time 100 Most Influential People, and Rachel Denhollander was there. And she was like, I don't know what Rhonda did or didn't do, but 40 people got molested over the year that Nassar was still being a doctor. Now, I don't know why or how Nassar wasn't taken off that, but I don't necessarily know if that falls on Rhonda Fain. And I feel like she kind of got railroaded here.
Okay.
But one of the reasons that they got railroaded is because Michigan handled this in a very Dave Brandon kind of situation. But kind of the key point to me is that, you know, when she got fired from USAG after this Raisman allegation, you know, people who were under her charge were very upset. And they actually took to social media about it. And that's something that you don't see very often. And then that social media got deleted.
Oh.
So it's like, you know, they had to circle the wagons. But this is a woman who got fired by people who you should probably be proud to be fired by. And there seemed to be some sort of clear affection between her and the team. And then after she gets fired, after her one day at Michigan, there are a couple of Michigan gymnasts who are displeased about this and willing to put it on Twitter, which, again, is very unusual.
Displeased about her firing.
Right. And, like, they are also Larry Nassar victims. Mm. So, like, they were briefed about this. We actually have kind of a gymnastics insider who talks to us.
Of course we do.
A strange thing. But we've heard about some of the stuff that's been going on. I mean, nothing's bad has been going on, but this person is established.
Yeah.
So they did run it by them, and they were on board with it. And they don't think that she had any particular blame in this, and it didn't matter because Raisman's upset and Den Hollander is upset. And you might have some case that this woman didn't do her duty or, like, should have gone above and beyond and be like, all right, well, this is now. But I just kind of feel like people think that they're going to be a superhero in those situations when it's like, I've been here for a month. I'm trying to do the right thing. I don't know that this organization is deeply compromised.
Yeah.
Like, I have some faith in the institution.
Because you literally just took that job.
Right. And you don't know that, you know, if you've been around there for 13 years and, you know, Steve Penny's a weirdo and, you know, is protecting this Nassar guy, then sure. But, like, I just don't know if that's realistic. And it kind of feels shitty that this woman is now unhirable, despite the fact that people who wanted her on the team, who are also Larry Nassar victims, are like, yeah, this is fine. I'm fine with her.
And it's mostly because of Michigan's actions.
Well, the way they went about this was probably the worst possible way, is they kind of had her on the sideline. They didn't say anything about it.
So I don't get that.
So they're allowing everybody else to frame it. And that's some Dave Brandon business right there.
So what's the upside of not mentioning?
I don't know. I mean, the way to go about this is to call a press conference and tell people what it's about and give them her congressional testimony and have her there and just talk about why you feel that this is an appropriate hire for Michigan.
And that seems like not a bad idea.
And, you know, the Regents kind of came out like, this person needs to be fired, because nobody talked to them about it. And, like, I know this is just a gymnastics assistant coach, but you have to know that this goes.
Yeah, because of the last year.
Right. Like, you can't just hire anyone where linked to Nassar is even remotely possible without looping in all the Regents first and coming at it with, like, a plan of attack.
And super vetting everything.
Right. And, like, so I kind of feel like there was a version of this hire that people are okay with, but Michigan kind of came at it in the wrong way. Now, you know, Ward immediately cutting bait and apologizing is probably, it's not the worst thing in the world, but I also feel like they backed themselves in a corner because they screwed this up right at the beginning.
So could they have called a press conference then and talked about it and not fired her? Or
probably not, because it looks like you're trying to sneak it by on the sly.
Yeah.
Which is just like,
We, like you said, we had an athletic department like that.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't not tell anybody for a day and then make people publish at 1 a.m.
well,
and do
yeah.
all the
but
incredibly
we,
stupid.
We lived through that.
They didn't double down.
No.
So that's accomplishment. But, like, man, that's just stupid. So we were having a conversation with Andrea Fisher Newman, and kind of towards the end of that conversation, she kind of brought up out of nowhere that she thought Ward was doing a really good job. And I don't have anything to say that within the department that's not the case. But, like, from a outsider's perspective, that kind of baffled me, because I can't think of one thing that Ward has done. Like,
that is built upon what Hackett did?
Or, I mean, so he hasn't really had a major decision to make in terms of, like, coaches and that kind of stuff. He hasn't really had to fire anybody yet, I don't think. He hasn't had to hire anybody super important.
Mel, right?
Well, Mel was kind of a... you are right that, like, I had heard that Ward facilitated that transition in a way that was helpful, and that was far from uncertain. That's a good point.
But also that was, like, I mean, it seemed like Mel was going to come if they wanted him.
Right. I mean, the hiring Mel was not...
It's not pulling...
A difficult decision or something that would have been difficult to pull off. But,
right.
Like,
but he did it. So you give him a plus one.
Right. So, but, like, in terms of, like, the fan-facing, it, aspects of the department. I don't know what would be different if Dave Brannon was still the AD. Like, they've completely trashed Yost and its environment. They, you know, Chrysler's fine. You know, the stadium itself, Michigan Stadium, is kind of like, all right, it's okay. Like, the food's still bad. The commercials still go on forever.
Ticket prices still.
There's still no connectivity in the stadium. It's like, you know, I just kind of feel like he's just a guy. And he's not Dave Brannon. He's not actively destroying everything that we love about Michigan. But, you know, between the hockey not being on TV anymore and kind of like just kind of stagnant aspects of
well, the
in-game experience, plus this, I'm kind of like, I'm kind of over it, you know?
But also, like, you look at the things that Hackett got done in his six months, a year. And, I mean, granted, like, Michigan needed a number of things.
There were more things to do.
Sure. But, like, he hit a few home runs. I think it wasn't like...
Well, you know, it's we don't know that Ward wouldn't have been able to secure...
No, we don't.
Harbaugh.
But even the Nike deal was a pretty big thing. And
we don't know that Ward wouldn't have been able to do that either. Like, it's kind of like, well, does the Big Ten really need Jim Delaney to negotiate television contracts? No. So, like, I appreciate Hackett and everything he did. I think he did everything basically on point. But, you know, I don't necessarily think that...
Someone else couldn't have done it?
Yeah. Someone else moderately competent.
They did cancel some football series, didn't they?
I mean, they canceled the Arkansas series to play Notre Dame, which I'm fine with, even if it's awkward.
Really?
I mean, who cares? Like,
well, I do.
Like, Michigan didn't lose to Notre Dame because it was at Notre Dame Stadium. You know, they lost to Notre Dame because they played a bad game.
Yeah.
I'd rather play them than Arkansas. But
they
also
got rid of the Virginia Tech series.
I mean, everybody does that, though.
Everybody gets rid of Virginia Tech?
Well, no, but, like, everybody's like, no. Remember when Michigan State and Alabama were going to play a series?
Alabama's slightly different class.
Well, no, but, like, that didn't come off. So I just think that's something that happens on a regular basis. And I don't necessarily think that's better or worse for Michigan. But also, like, you know, I'd like to have a plus AD. And I haven't seen anything that makes me think, oh, yeah, that's. I'm glad that he's AD. Because from a fan perspective, it's just like I kind of still feel like I'm...
It's kind of the same.
Yeah, I'm just a guy who offers money in exchange for tickets, and there's not a whole lot of upside that I've seen since he's been the AD.
Fair.
So, and then
And then this.
And then this, an 0.5 Brandon.
Which kind of came out of the blue.
Well, it did come out of the blue.
Yeah.
I mean, he hasn't really had a PR issue prior to this.
He hasn't really had a PR opportunity.
No, and they didn't do something incredibly stupid afterwards. So there's that. I mean, that's not nothing.
No, I know. It, like, just it sounded funny when you said it.
A lot of people who are in positions of power don't believe that they can be wrong.
No.
And for Ward to be like, I'm sorry, this was a mistake, is something that not everybody does. So that is a point in his favor, but also just like you could have made this happen if you wanted to make it happen. And I think you got to loop in Den Hollander, you got to loop in Raisman, and you got to, you know,
just come up, be upfront about everything.
Yeah, just be upfront about everything, and don't like have this woman who was, you know, in front of Congress about Larry Nassar show up on the other sideline randomly. So, bad move. Do something good. Please, anything. One fan-facing improvement. That's all I ask per year.
More connectivity in every stadium.
Sure. I mean, yeah, that would be a good start. Connectivity at Michigan Stadium. They have it a lot of places, but not Michigan.
Podcast. I'm David Nasternak, along with Brian Cook, and I'm here for your Zareems and your Sad Fouls.
Who's got it better than